This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. How can social media facilitate better political speech? Twitter banned political advertising on its platform earlier this fall. The ban includes ads that reference a political candidate, a party, an election, or legislation. Our next guests say Twitter took it too far and that digital ads are good for our democracy, but it's complicated. Daniel Kreese is principal researcher at the University of North Carolina Center for Information Technology and Public Life, also a professor at the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media. Daniel, welcome. Good to have you here.
Great to be here.
Also with us is Matt Perrault. He is former director of public policy at Facebook and the director of the Duke University Center on Science and Technology Policy, teaches at Duke Sanford School for Public Policy. Matt, welcome to you.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Good to have you. Let's talk about your reaction, Matt. I'll start with you, to Twitter's ban on political ads.
So we think it's deeply problematic. We think it's problematic while we acknowledge that it rids the world of bad use cases of political advertising. The reason we think it's problematic is it also rids the world of good use cases. So right now, someone with a strong organic following on Twitter, like President Trump, for instance, he can tweet anything he wants, so long as it's consistent with Twitter's community standards. If an environmental group wanted to run an ad against his environmental policy and call for cap and trade legislation, call for legislation that would help climate change, if a gay rights organization wanted to run an ad supporting marriage equality laws, they would be prohibited from doing that on Twitter under this new policy.
Yeah, and that's it. I think, Daniel, let's talk about this. We really need to make this distinction. What we're banning here, what Twitter is banning, is paid political advertising. If you have a following, you can say anything you want, right?
That's right. Yeah, and I think the research is pretty clear here that the thing about digital advertising is that it lowers the cost of engaging in paid political speech. And that favors challengers to incumbents who all of a sudden can more efficiently reach the voters that they need to reach in order to start to build a following and then to capitalize on in an organic way. We also know that digital advertising can often boost turnout, particularly among younger voters, and particularly when there's competitive elections. So there are a lot of use cases that would be very pro-democratic and cases where we would say that digital ads are actually an important part of the electoral process.
All right. And so, but again, it's been a problem. We've seen, you know, robots can, well, I guess, again, you're talking in that case about organic following and not necessarily paid advertising. But talk more about the difference, Matt, and why a candidate who might want to get started doesn't just use that following to build on that and not have to pay for ads.
Well, so they can certainly use Twitter organically. They can use Facebook. They can use Google organically. The question is, what are they able to use? What are they able to do using their own campaign finances? And so under the new policy, they wouldn't be able to run ads to build a following on Twitter, for instance. So if they start with a small organic following and they want to take advantage of the low cost of advertising on social media, it's significantly lower than television advertising, significantly lower than newspaper advertising. And if they want to take advantage of that on Twitter, they would be unable to do so under the new policy. And so our thinking is that that will disadvantage challengers and benefit incumbents.
And you talked about counter speech as well, because if I, with my large, if I'm Donald Trump and I've got my following and I lie about you, if you need to pay to reach that big an audience, can't do it.
Yeah, and I think this is really one of the keys to what I think are sensible middle ground proposals, which is to say, what are the clearly bad use cases of digital advertising and how can we counter that? And one of the things that we saw, for instance, in 2016 was the president's campaign stated that they had run ads that were highly negative about Hillary Clinton targeted to African Americans in inner city areas. Now, in 2016, there was nothing that Hillary Clinton could have done about that to counter that in some way. So one of our big proposals is that platform companies should enable rival candidates to reach the same audiences with counter messaging that would help counteract any effects of other demobilization ads in order to promote the positive aspects of a rival campaign, for instance.
And that kind of micro-targeting, Matt, that Daniel was talking about, sometimes the candidate themselves will come in with the demographic information, with the metrics, and say, we have an audience we want to reach. Mind if we use our stuff to reach them? And that in itself can be a problem, right?
It can be a problem if it's done in an opaque way. And so what we call for in the piece is moving from data opacity of these external audience lists, these external customer lists, toward data transparency. So if you bring a list of people that you want to target to a social media platform and you can verify that that list is legitimate, that you're not using it to undermine the social network's community standards, the social network's policies, and then the social network is able to verify and enforce to ensure that that's the case, we think that that's totally fine.
Yeah, but here's where it gets dicey. Of course that's it. Look, I need to be president of the United States. I am the future of this country. Everything I do here is aimed at a high moral cause. Right. So how would I not be violating your if I came in with that micro targeting list and said, I need to get in? How could you, as a social media platform, counter that and say, you know, I think that violates our standards?
Well, I think there's a couple things that they could do. I think to go to what Matt was saying, they could do much better at verifying the sorts of targeting lists that candidates are buying ads around. Another thing that they could do is make sure that the forms of targeting that they afford, such as targeting on the basis of ideology, is in line with their pre-existing values. So if you want to make sure that candidates can't just speak to the most extreme among us, then one of the things that you could do is add a little friction into the system and make it harder to reach just the people who are most extreme when it comes to ideology.
But would your filter have excluded then if I said I want to reach African-American audiences in inner city markets so that they can understand how they've been lied to by the Democratic Party? Let's say that's my argument. Would you say, no, I need to filter that? Under your plan, would you not allow that?
Well, I think in that case, what we would say is that the solution would be counter speech, right? So if a certain candidate is making appeals on the basis of to certain racial or ethnic voters, what we would want is that rival campaigns for the same office to see what those appeals are and to have an opportunity to respond to them in some way. And I think that that really should be the guideline. Now, some companies, including Google, say that there shouldn't be any racial or ethnic targeting whatsoever. If that's the case, then Google has every right to sort of say that we should only allow targeting that is in line with our pre-existing policies.
Yeah, so targeting, I think, is getting a bad name now. Targeting is primarily about efficiency, and efficiency works for incumbents, but we think it's particularly important for challengers, and challengers being able to spend less money to reach voters in a more effective way. We think that's really important for democracy. The kinds of challenges that we think exist are that right now you could run an ad saying the weather is terrible in Michigan today, watch out and don't go on the roads. And that might be fine generally to run an ad to show that type of content, to run an ad showing that. But it might be problematic if you showed it only to black voters in a certain district that you thought was going to be influential in the election and you were targeting that ad in a way so as to try to suppress voter turnout. Facebook has a policy prohibiting voter suppression. So the combination of that list and that message targeted in that way would violate Facebook's policies. And so all we're calling for in the piece is transparency from the advertiser side to try to prohibit that kind of use case, which is a violation of Facebook's existing policies.
But it does. I do hear two different streams. One is transparency. Let the other side know what you did and who you tried to reach. But the other is a kind of a filter saying this doesn't meet our standards. Now, how do you do the filtering and say, I believe this ad is actually aimed at voter suppression and not at voter education? How do you do that?
Well, so I think this goes back to what Matt had said earlier, which is that there needs to be more accountability built into the system, right? So all these platform companies should be verifying the sorts of lists of voters, on what basis those voters are being selected. And they should also be in the process of actively filtering the content that's going to be run on their platforms to make sure that it accords with their pre-existing policies and standards. So in Matt's case, for instance, if Facebook already says we're not going to have any messages that are designed for voter suppression, they need a way to make sure that the messages that are being purchased on their platform do not violate that stated policy.
Yeah, but again, I really wonder how you do that, because if I'm arguing that no, voters need this particular subset of voters need to know this is the absolute truth. truth, and you're saying, you know, I'm thinking what you're trying to do here is keep them away from the polls. How do you test that, and who's the arbiter here?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that there's mechanisms already in place at most of these companies. The first level of filter is to use machine learning and in order to vet what might be problematic or not. And then there needs to be a human review, because precisely the issue is that in politics and with political speech, a lot of it is contextual, a lot of it is interpretive. And Facebook needs to have a clear set of policies and procedures in place and key justifications that are made public for ads that they decide to take down, and they need to say why. And I would say there needs to be a contestable mechanism for those people who are affected by takedowns to be able to challenge those rulings in some way.
One way to think about what we're calling for is that it shifts the burden of responsibility from the platform for somehow trying to figure out if a campaign has brought a list to them that is going to undermine their policies, to the advertiser, to the campaign, to show this list is legitimate. So I think part of what you're getting at when you ask about how do you draw lines is now the campaign or the advertiser would bear some responsibility for saying, for showing that the list that they're bringing to the campaign is legitimate.
All right. So they'd have to actually back that up, almost like a court case. You're taking it to the court and you need to have your arguments all lined up before we'll even consider it.
Right. And we think that's far preferable to prohibiting that kind of targeting entirely.
Very quickly, I've allowed you only 30 seconds, but the fact is that we're in brand new territory. Are you optimistic that, you know, in fits and starts, we're getting there? Things have changed?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the research community's perspective, all the major platforms, and Facebook in particular, has been much more proactive about reaching out to the to our community of independent researchers and scholars to help improve election integrity heading into 2020.
I'm pessimistic in a lot of ways. I'm pessimistic because you have members of Congress calling for action that would be unconstitutional if they were to take it themselves, barred by First Amendment reasons. You have the chair of the Federal Election Commission calling for action, which she's probably best positioned to take on her own.
Matt Perrault is former director of public policy at Facebook. He's at Duke now. Daniel Kreiss is at UNC Chapel Hill. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.